In the midst of a summer reading season comes word that another long-standing book-selling tradition may be headed for the digital dustbin. Seasonal sales once helped publishers and stores to organize their work. But in the age of ebooks and social media, the seasons are all done. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. For now, at least, publishers are hanging on to seasons for their organizational sanity. But Andrew Albanese, senior writer of Publishers Weekly, joins me now to explain why the lines marking out winter, spring, summer, and fall are becoming blurred. Welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey, Chris. Great to be here.
So this is a really fascinating issue, and this coming Monday's issue for Publishers Weekly has a story by Judith Rosen that looks at it pretty closely.
Yeah, you know, it's a really good sort of meaty look at how books are traditionally sold within the trade, which is, of course, as you say, by seasons. You know, you'll often hear the words, you know, a house's big fall book, or our great summer reads, or our lead title for this spring. And, you know, for most of publishing history, that kind of breakdown by season was necessary because it organized the business for retailers and for publishers and their reps into something that it was at least somewhat manageable. But, you know, digital waits for no man, and yet another thing digital is disrupting. We've begun to look closely over the last few years as to whether it's really worth holding on to seasonal lists and catalogs when digital and social media can now launch and sustain the sales of books. In fact, we've now sort of entered this age of having one perpetual season, says Mark LaFrambois, who's the head book buyer at Washington, D.C.-based Politics and Prose Bookstores. And, you know, that's okay, he says. You know, after all, the publishing seasons were originally determined by when, you know, barges could actually deliver their cargo. That's kind of changed with digital delivery, obviously. Nowadays, print books are also competing against ebooks, and ebooks are in effect seasonless. And as I know very well from my own recent experience, you can pop out an ebook pretty quickly on a range of subjects. As you did mention, for now, publishers are hanging on to seasons, and that is mostly for their organizational sanity. But with seasonal lists that now can stretch beyond 1,000 titles for these major corporations, and in addition to drop-ins or late-breaking ebooks or new books, you know, the lines are getting ever more blurred. You know, as Judith notes in the story, you know, the time-honored ritual of, you know, drinking a glass of wine while marking up a stack of publisher catalogs the evening before the rep comes to visit your store, well, you know, that's changing. You know, and taken together with the changing role of reps, whose focus is increasingly on sell-through rather than sell-in, as well as the need to keep pace with the news cycle, which is 24 hours, you know, 24/7, there's some profound changes in the works, I think we can agree. You know, Random House's Ruth Lieben noted in the piece that booksellers are telling us that they're spending a lot less time thinking about initial orders and more time staying on top of breaking media and daily sales reports. You know, very recently, I'll give you one example, was, you know, Robert Galbraith, who is J.K. Rowling. You know, in April, that book was published by Hachette, but before we knew that it was J.K. Rowling. So, you know, very sleepy sales in the initial, but as soon as it broke online that, you know, J.K. Rowling was actually the author of this book, The Cuckoo's Calling, it shot to the top of the bestseller lists, and booksellers started reordering it. So you're seeing a lot more of that these days, and it's having some big implications for the traditional way books have been bought and sold.
All right. Well, you mentioned the masked author known as Robert Galbraith. We found out she, J.K. Rowling.
That's right.
But there are some masked men and women wandering around San Diego right now, and that would be Comic-Con. PW is there, of course, Cal Reed and Heidi McDonald. So tell us, what's going on?
Yeah, it was another great show for Comic-Con. Actually, it just, you know, wrapped up, and, you know, PW was there, and we covered it, and you can read all about Comic-Con on our website. But yeah, break out the costumes. Another Comic-Con, and for all of us who think that, you know, BEA is kind of a whirlwind situation, Comic-Con is a reminder that our lives could be a lot crazier. This show once again drew more than 130,000 attendees, and lots of publishers, of course, pushing their books and authors amid the usual mix of Hollywood scenesters and autograph hunters and memorabilia collectors and the always fun costumed fans that were jamming the streets of San Diego. So our Calvin Reed and Heidi McDonald filed their daily reports. You can check them out in PW online. And in Monday's issue, we'll have a wrap piece on the fair, so you'll want to check that out as well.
Well, Andrew, you know, apart from that little slipped-in promo for your book, we should tell people, remind people about your book. It's called what?
It's called The Battle of 999, and it's now been updated with an afterword on the verdict and a couple of other little tidbits about developments in the market. And chances are we're probably going to update it again before the end of the year as things continue to go on. So, you know, thank you for that opportunity once again. It's available in all the major ebook stores.
Right. Well, we can't get through a program with you, Andrew Albanese, unless we talk a little bit about Apple and about the issues surrounding the Department of Justice ebook price fixing suit. So this week we got a new peek into how much the legislation, or rather the litigation, is going to cost publishers. And any idea when any of that money will find its way to the ebook consumers?
Yeah, right. So, you know, this week, earlier this month, the states had actually filed an updated tally with the court on how much of the damages have actually been paid by publishers in their ebook price fixing suit. That was made public on Tuesday, and PW was we first reported it on Wednesday. But what was really interesting to me in looking this at and looking at these numbers was that there really was a premium that was paid by the last two publishers to settle, which were Penguin and Macmillan. So, you know, just to give you a little background, and all the five major publishers have now paid over $166 million to the Consumer Reimbursement Fund. This does not include legal fees and other core costs that they will pay as well. And also, that consumer fund now includes the state of Minnesota, which was the one state that had decided not to participate in the litigation and decided to take its own road. It ended up securing, Minnesota officials ended up securing about $3.9 million for readers in Minnesota. But the document filed with the court also showed that the states put the total publisher liability at around $218 million. In other words, the states in the consumer class believe that in that short agency period that was covered by the suit from basically early 2010 or so to early 2012, the consumers were overcharged by about $218 million. Now, the publishers are not paying $218 million. They settled for less. At least three of them did. You know, for the initial settling publishers, that was Hachette, HarperCollins, and Simon & Schuster, their payments ranged to, you know, around 42 to 60% of the total liability. They used the same formula, but those numbers varied a little because of the ebooks that they sold, the specific titles that were actually for sale then. So in settling early, those three publishers got a pretty good discount on the damages that they could have been hit with had they lost. Hachette, for example, was on the hook for $62 million, according to the states. It settled for about $32 million. Now, for Penguin and Macmillan, the last two pubs to settle, they actually paid more than the estimated damages. Penguin's liability was actually pegged at $62 million, and it paid $75 million, settling just days before it was set to go to trial. So you mentioned when we might see that stuff and, you know, what happens now when that money might actually begin flowing. Well, the short answer is we don't really know. But in April, the court allowed the fund to hold the money collected for up to 6 months. So technically, I guess, that 6 months is up in October. So the money collected so far, which is almost, you know, all of what the publishers agreed to pay, that actually could be dispersed at any moment. It could go out this summer. It probably could go out before October when the 6 months will end. But also the court could easily extend that order if it expects that there's going to be another big chunk of change coming in there. And that, of course, brings us to the next big question is how much is Apple going to put into the fund? Or what if they win on appeal and they don't put anything in? You know, and that could all take a long time to sort out pending all their appeals. So I'm not going to guess how much Apple is on the line for. There's been a lot of speculation. You've seen anywhere from $200 million to $500 million. We just don't know at this stage. But I would guess this, that I would think that ebook consumers are not going to have to wait that much longer to see the publisher portion of this, the $166 million collected so far, start flowing. And for publishers, that would certainly make for a tidy little holiday ebook bump if it was to come out in the fall.
Right. And a bump for a certain fellow who runs a company called Amazon as well.
That's right.
$6 million. Right.
A hefty percentage of the claims that are being paid out through accounts on Amazon. So, yes, indeed.
Something to make Jeff Bezos happy. Well, Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly and the author of The Battle of 999. Thank you very much for joining us again on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at beyondthebook.com. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.